Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for August 31st, 2007. This week, why immigrants are so healthy and a computer with a sense of humor. But first, Suzanne Bard's going to tell you about rampant adultery in Arctic foxes.
In foxes, wolves, and coyotes, males and females often share parental duties, bringing in food and protecting the young. For a long time, researchers thought these species were monogamous. But a recent study of Arctic foxes on Bylot Island in Canada suggests otherwise. University of Alberta biologist Lindsay Carmichael and her colleagues took DNA samples from 49 Arctic foxes. Carmichael analyzed the DNA fingerprints of the babies and found that some of the furry canines had different fathers from their siblings.
What we found was that in 75% of the dens, the foxes were monogamous, but in the other 25%, the foxes were not.
Carmichael thinks that increasing the genetic diversity of a mother's litter in any given year could increase the odds that one or more of her pups will survive.
Thanks, Suzanne. Now we have a question from a curious listener, Tony Skura of Nome, Alaska. He called to ask why the moon doesn't spin on its axis. Well, astronomer David Helfand of Columbia University says this is a common misconception. Although we always see the same side of the moon, it is spinning on its axis. In fact, it must be spinning at just the right speed in order to keep the same side pointing at Earth.
Because as the moon revolves once around the Earth every 28 days or so, it also rotates exactly once on its axis, so it keeps the same face towards the Earth. This is because of the tidal interaction between the Earth and the moon, which has locked it in this position.
And if your mind is spinning with a science question, call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use it, you'll win a Science Update mug. Next, could new software make computers more fun to be around? Justin Warner reports.
Creating artificial intelligence is hard enough, but designing an artificial sense of humor is tougher still. Just ask University of Cincinnati computer engineers Julia Taylor and Lawrence Maslach. They're developing a software program that can recognize simple knock-knock jokes and one-word puns. Taylor says the software checks for puns whenever a sentence doesn't make literal sense.
It looks for the words that don't fit, and it finds words that sound similar, and if they fit, then we call it a joke.
For example, a mother says to her son, "Johnny, you've been working in the garden a lot this summer." The son replies, "I know, my teacher told me to weed a lot." Get it? Weed? Read? To understand even a joke like this, the software has to know that weed doesn't fit, that weed sounds like read, and that read makes sense. So it draws on a vast database that links words to their sounds, meanings, and possible context. As with a person, the more jokes the program knows, the more it can understand. Eventually, Taylor hopes to train computers to spot more sophisticated punchlines using the same basic principles.
So again, there will be something that doesn't fit with what you have in your knowledge base. And then you start looking for what is it? Why doesn't it fit?
The ultimate goal is to make talking with computers more like talking with people.
Thanks, Justin. 300 million years ago, the Earth teemed with giant insects, including dragonflies with 2-foot wingspans. Where did they all go? Well, new research supports a theory that dropping oxygen levels in the atmosphere forced insects to shrink. The study found that the respiratory system of a modern beetle takes up a larger fraction of its body the bigger the beetle is. If a beetle grew too immense today, it wouldn't have enough room in its body for nerves and tendons. But in the past, when more oxygen was available, the respiratory system didn't take up so much room, and the beetle could grow into a giant. And 500 million years ago, a relative of modern insects called a trilobite burst onto the scene and can now be found inhabiting fossil shops everywhere. It turns out that there were 17,000 species of trilobites. A new study in the journal Science compares nearly 1,000 of them for clues to the explosive pace of their evolution. Next, Suzanne reports on research into why Mexicans who immigrate to the U.S. are so healthy.
Despite being poorer, Mexican immigrants are substantially healthier than Mexican Americans born in the U.S. This according to University of Southern California demographer Eileen Crimmins and her colleagues. Crimmins says that while immigrants might have better dietary habits, there's also evidence that immigration tends to attract hardier, more able-bodied people.
And what we think happens with Mexicans who immigrate here is that the healthy come, and you don't come if you're not healthy.
Ultimately, Crimmins hopes to understand why Hispanics, in general, appear healthier than expected for their socioeconomic status. This study suggests that healthier immigrants may statistically mask the problems of their U.S.-born counterparts.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's all for this week. Next week, we'll tell you about some amazing crows from the South Pacific whose use of tools rivals that of the great apes. And we'll find out which kinds of trees are the best at cooling the planet. If you like our show, you might want to tune in to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. It's a one-minute shot of science goodness every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.